It's the best and often the worst of IndyCar this season. Welcome to our season review on Motorsport 101. I told you we weren't quite done with IndyCar this season just yet. Thankfully, there's one more tasty morsel for you. Welcome to episode 398 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And glad you could join us for this extended edition of Motorsport 101 as we get into our IndyCar season review and the best, the worst, and everything in between regarding the great series of IndyCar this year. And wow, yeah, you have a lot to get through, so let's get straight into our co-hosts as usual. Cam Buckley, hello sir.
Hello everyone. Happy to be continuing the discussion on Indianapolis cars.
Yes, it's a special one. And of course, RJ O'Connell, hello sir.
Yeah, that's right. Biggest IndyCar homer in the room. Biggest Indianapolis guy ever. Love the Colts. Matt Ryan's not it, but, you know, he just doesn't have that dog in him the way the Pate did, the Andrew Luck did before he took all those hits on the head. At least he got Jonathan Taylor. You know, Jonathan Bird's cafeteria, still the best restaurant. You know, every time I look up on my posters of the wall, I think of nothing but Offenhauser-powered roadsters. The way racing ought to be, the way it used to be.
I will cleanse this chat of this USAC simp.
That's one for the quote section about this Discord right there. Oh my God. What was that? That is 90 seconds of my life I am not getting back. Holy shit. Yes. Ignoring RJ's Indianapolis Homer phase and his 15 t-shirts with Joseph Newgarden on them. And the 10.
Buddy, I only have two.
You and I both know there is 10 more that is coming straight in from the Bus Bros merchandise store, because we all know you are super license eligible, just like Joseph and Scott are.
Me?
You know?
Super license eligible? Holy shit, that's amazing. I never would have imagined. These hours of grinding F1 20 at sets have finally culminated in me getting a super license.
Yeah, enjoy your precisely zero team offers, because there is no way IndyCar isn't milking this story about Colton Herta at all. No.
I just thought they wouldn't have been interested in a 32-year-old shut in with with bad cardio.
As you do.
And no media training.
Mm-mm.
Which is why it's weird that they have me doing. Anyway, we're doing the IndyCar season review.
Yeah, the IndyCar season review. We'll get into the nitty-gritty behind that right after I give us a basic wrap of where you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And our personal handles at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917, and at RJ O'Connell. Motorsport101.com. For all of our written content, as well as all our podcasts are on there as well. You can check all of our content out on there, including the review of MotoGP and Aragon. But for some reason, I actually forgot to mention that Moto3 bike incident in the actual review. Clever me. I'm a great rider, honestly. Well worth your time. And if you really like us, and I mean really, really, after that goose up, you're going to have to really like us. You can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our episodes live before they go to the public. There's some other perks in there, including listening to the audience and listening to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Jason, who's in the chat listening to us right now. Thanks, buddy. Without further ado, let's get into our 2022 IndyCar season review. So, gang, let's go to our IndyCar season review here for 2022. Now, we're going to keep the similar format to what we did last year regarding IndyCar. We're going to go roughly back to front from where we roughly think the teams are at based on this year's results, from bottom to top. We'll cover championship position. We'll get into some key bullet points on the team, i.e. driver performance, team performance, their futures, etc. So we'll get into that from the bottom. And oh no, the first name on the list unfortunately reads AJ Foyt Enterprises.
Death, taxes, AJ Foyt Enterprises bringing up the rear. Yeah.
Not good. Quick stat rundown. Number four car, Dalton Kellett, 25th in the championship. For those keeping score at home, yes, he was last of all the full-time runners in the year. And we had the 14 car of Kyle Kirkwood, who was second bottom and 24th. And unfortunately, the 11th car was withdrawn mid-season due to lack of funds from Rockets, who was propping up that third entry for a good chunk of the season, but pulled out halfway through. Second time in a row they've done that, unfortunately, over the course of the season.
Williams, but, Houston Rockets, mm-hmm. AJ Foyt Enterprises. And I mean, the only racing team that they committed to a full sponsorship with is Venturi. And if you're Maserati, you're thinking, I don't want to pick up that sponsorship. I'm looking somewhere else.
Yeah.
But that's for another Formula E discussion for another time. Let's talk about AJ Foyt Racing. They combined for one top 10 finish and 3 second round qualifying appearances. And all of that was Kyle Kirkwood.
Yeesh. Dalton Kellett was bottom of all the full-timers. And look, let me say on the record, and I know I'm going to get dogpiled for saying this, because if you ever talk about a driver's ability and talk about how nice a guy they are, that's never normally a good sign. But I do want to mention this, and I will keep saying this. Dalton Kellett was one of the very few IndyCar drivers, or IndyCar people in general, that has a genuine conscience. And he's incredibly smart. He has done so much good on social media this year towards raising awareness for good causes, raising money for those affected in the Texas shooting, talking about the Black Lives Matter movement, doing genuinely progressive things with STEM education as well as an engineer. Dalton Kellett is a great dude. Genuinely great guy, and I do wish him the best in whatever he continues to do, and I hope he sticks around in IndyCar in some capacity, because he's very good for the series. He's also probably outmatched at this level.
I don't even think it's probably, and I will co-sign on all those things, because Dalton Kellett would make for some a hell of a race engineer for another team, but I don't think this IndyCar driving thing is working out for him. I mean, he was a fringe prospect in Indy Lights to begin with. And it obviously hasn't worked out. Kyle Kirkwood could not be beaten getting up here. We had a whole podcast dedicated to why the hell isn't he getting a top flight ride? Well, he got this ride with Foyt, and there were flashes, but he had 7 retirements. All of them were crashes. And I would say 2 of them. There was Texas when he got brushed out of the top groove, out of the bottom groove by Devin DeFrancesco on a 1 groove track. That one wasn't really his fault. He was hit from behind by Graham Rahal at the Indy Grand Prix and spun out. That one was really his fault. But as the season went on, you saw a lot of unforced errors. You saw a lot of incidents that were his fault, like the one with Jimmy Johnson in Toronto, like the one with David Malukas in Nashville.
That one the was speed's really, there. Really rough.
The yeah, speed I
mean,
is there.
The speed is there. That is not in question. I mean,
oh, definitely.
He was head and shoulders on lap time, head and shoulders above everyone else at Foyt. But I guess it shows just how far Foyt off that really didn't get him much as far as results. And as the season wore on, it reeked of overdriving in shitty equipment.
Yeah. Damaged his wrist in Detroit as well. So, you know, he was injured throughout the year as well. I think Cam's spot on. I think it was the quintessential, I have to go over the limit to get anything out of this shitbox. And it's unfortunate because in the stat sheet, it looks like, you know, Kirkwood's been dreadful this year. And I wouldn't say that. I mean, I've seen enough of Kirkwood on track to suggest that there is definitely still a very, very good driver there.
Oh, and don't get us wrong. He got that parachute. I know times have been tough at Andretti Autosport compared to what they're used to, but he got the good parachute. And it's a good thing they did, because this team has been chewing up young drivers and spinning them out. Jack Hawksworth's career, killed in the crater. Carlos Munoz, hardly ever seen again. Connor Daly, had to work for years just to get back to the spot. Mateus Leiss, 2 years out of here. How in the world did Sebastian Bourdais manage three top five finishes with this team in the last 2 years?
Sebastian Bourdais, different gravy. I mean, it really doesn't matter who you put in this team. They have been a factory of irrelevance since the car team started spilling back into IRL in the early 2000s.
Do you want to know how long it's been since they've won a race? Long Beach 2013, Takuma Sato.
Takuma Sato, AJ Foyt driver. That is before both of his Indy 500s.
Yeah.
You want to know how long, and then you have to go back another 11 years to find their next win.
Oh my God.
So that is a grand total of two IndyCar victories since the turn of the century.
Two.
Yeah.
And they've had
utter irrelevance and incompetence for two decades.
And it's not like they can blame the drivers. They've had quality drivers in their seats in that time. Tony Kanaan, Carlos Munoz. I've screamed from the heavens, and I'm not just saying this because he's been on the show before, right? Carlos Munoz was genuinely one of the best shots to win a 500 in the field. Genuinely, point blank, he was a top five 500 runner. He killed his career. Has not been seen since. I weep for Carlos Munoz's career. I feel like Matt Leiss was probably a little bit out of his depth, but even so, he was two and done, which in IndyCar is a death sentence. And,
what do you do to fix this? Because they've got, in that span, like, they've gone from Honda back to Chevrolet, right? They've gone through so many different drivers.
I don't think you can, because they've done everything, RJ. They've shuffled all of their engineering around. They've changed engine manufacturers multiple times in this era. And that lack of continuity can't do you any good. They've been operating on a good budget from sponsorship. They've been operating on peanuts.
Yeah. They've had losing ABC Supply Company as a sponsor a couple of years ago. Yep. That hit hard.
That hit hard, but like, what's the difference in the results? They went from two top tens a year to one. It doesn't matter what you plug into this team. It just seems like they are fundamentally stuck at the back of the grid.
And somebody's got to fill that 14 car.
But who?
Good luck. Good luck to whoever gets that spot.
Because Kirkwood is the one bright spot of their year was someone with an extraordinary rookie, junior career coming up, came into the series and couldn't fix it. And rode off a few cars along the way because he was having to drive 120% to get anything out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, didn't you say there was rumors about that 14 car next year, RJ?
I mean, I'd heard like stuff about, obviously Felipe Drugovich has a job next year.
No,
next. Martin.
I was going to say don't.
Which I was going to reply, is a drive at Foyt really the best you could do, considering this was at the time where, you know, the 10-car Ganassi would have been open? I don't know who you get for that. But if you're a Kyle Kirkwood believer, you just got to think anecdotally, there was a time 25 years ago where another rookie driver had a terrible first season. And then they went to the 27 car, which was then under the employ of Team Green. And I got to say, things turned out all right for Dario Franchitti. Maybe they'll turn out all right for Kyle Kirkwood.
Yeah. I mean, driving talent, engineering talent, and sponsorship dollars. And it's a bottomless pit.
Yeah. It's like starting an F1 manager save and immediately picking Williams. You know what you signed up for. It's just bad across the board. And their star driver is gone. They lucked into having arguably the most talented junior prospect in the road to Indy's history, and he was second from bottom, and I don't think that's all on Kirkwood, which kind of says it all, really.
You want to talk about spending what little money you have the right way, though? Let's get into Juncos Hollinger Racing. Callum
Back
Ilott.
From the grave, Juncos Racing.
Callum Ilott finished 20th in this championship. I need to remind everybody that until Brad Hollinger, formerly an investor of Williams, bought in on this team in August 2021, that race shop was should have been an abandoned shopping mall where all the anchor stores are closed and they're just waiting to tear this down and put up an Amazon fulfillment center, because that team was dead. They had fired pretty much everybody. And it showed in the cup of coffee that Ilott got at the end of last year. But they bought up Carlin Racing's old stuff and did better with it than Carlin Racing and Matt Chilton did. Callum Ilott got them into the second round of qualifying, 6 times on road and street courses. He qualified second at Laguna Seca, and that could have been his first podium until his engine let go. Not everybody picks up ovals immediately the way Nigel Mansell did. Certainly Callum had a bad wreck at the Indy 500 that messed up his hand and forced him to miss a race. But, you know, it's a great start.
It's a very promising start for Callum Ilott, given he's driving for the team that probably has the smallest amount of resources than anyone on the IndyCar grid. I think that's an unfair assumption.
No.
And, you know, this is promising stuff. Like, and it's only going to get better because they're getting a second car next year, and we'll talk about that briefly in a minute. But
I would be careful to say that, because I think that the best thing that this team can do is just expand. You don't want to expand too quickly, too early.
Mm.
And I do think a second seat, if you can get some money in that seat and get a quality driver at the same time, that sets you up very well going forward. But as RJ said, spending what you have the right way has always been something that Juncos has been very good at. You know, we know circumstances pretty much, you know, nearly ended this team after their Indy 500 bid of 2019 ended with a couple of written off cars.
Mm.
But there's no reason to think that they can't keep this trajectory going, because it is a quality organization. And Callum Ilott, I mean, he acquitted himself very well in this grid.
Oh, buddy. Yeah. You want to talk about dudes that are Formula One's loss and IndyCar's gain. I'm telling you what, I'm glad that a lot of us were wrong about the Callum Ilott doesn't want to be here propaganda, because he sure looks good in one of these Indy cars. And he was on Ganassi's shortlist.
He was.
And then he signed and then he got tied down to a long-term contract extension.
I literally put in the show notes, did he commit too early to sticking with this team long-term? Because, like, I do fear of the Ed Jones effect of taking on too much too soon and taking on a big role. I mean, because back then we were thinking, hey, there's a good chance Pelot's not coming back next year. And, you know, apparently one of the guys on Chip's shortlist for the 10 seat was Callum Ilott. Apparently David Malukas was on there too. So Chip was clearly looking for a younger driver to maybe nurture into the role. And, well, there you go. Callum Ilott was on that shortlist. I wonder, has he committed a bit too soon? I mean, if he's talking about a long-term deal, you're thinking at least 2 years. Is Juncos going to make big enough strides to justify keeping a driver of his talent? Because if Callum keeps this up, he's going to get a lot of suitors.
I like that, though. I like him committing to this team, and I think this team has shown all the right signs so far. It's realistically, though, this team shares the name, Juncos was dead in the water.
Yeah.
Middle of 2021. It's a very young team with a very promising core. I like that he's committed to them and wants to build this team up.
Yeah.
And this year, I think he showed the talent that he can do that.
I don't know. I mean, if you're, I'm glad he's committed, and you know, it's a cool story. It's a great coup for Junkos to have Callum to build around for the next couple of the years at least. That's a steal, given that he could have easily jumped ship at the end of this year, given he was being affiliated with some really big name opportunities. So it's a great coup for them to keep Callum on. I just wonder if this outlet, especially given expansion has been tricky for other teams, we'll get to, that, you know, they're going to make big gains on what they've had this year. Because, I mean, yeah, I think Callum's a bit better than 20th overall on the season. How much
the pace was there for more, and obviously missing a race hurt.
Oh, definitely didn't help.
Let's say they from circumstances outside of their control, they left quite a few points on the table.
Mm-hmm.
They can get those back next year. You never know. Could sneak a win.
I tell you, that those Chevrolet engines, top class.
Both engines this year in IndyCar,
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good parity in this, the waning days of the 2.2s.
Yeah. Should we talk about the brothers in pink?
The brothers in pink. Meyer Shank Racing.
Elliot Castroneves and Simon Pagenaud, a lot of experience, but out of that 15th and 18th in the championship for Pagenaud and Castroneves, respectively. Wait, what? They just won the Indianapolis 500 and they got a former series champion and Indy 500 winner.
Yeah, I mean, the death lineup didn't quite work, but I mean, seventh for Elio on the day, with Simon right there as well. He did have to come back from 27th on the grid, and that is solid.
That is pretty solid. That is
damn solid. Got a bad qualifying slot. But is he worth keeping around for another full season, given he turns, that magnificent dude turns 48 next May?
48 years Elio young.
Elio Castroneves acts like a 25-year-old most of the time. He has so much youthful energy. But as the great Bob Costas once says, even Superman apparently gets tired. And there were still flashes that Elio still got it. You know, he came back through the field in the 500. He had three top tens. He made the fast sits at a street course this year. He led a lap. But, that was about it. The only crash he had wasn't his fault, but for my money, Elio Castroneves is the greatest driver that never won a national championship, certainly of the modern age. And the four Indy 500s more than makes up for that. But I'm expecting next year to be his last season as a full-time competitor. And for some, many are wondering if that's one too many. Pagenaud.
Your man's Cam. So talk to me about your man's.
He probably was a little bit better across the board than the results showed, but it still wasn't great. High point of second at the Indy Grand Prix, albeit no one was beating Colton Herta that day.
Buckets on buckets on buckets of rain. We'll get back to that race in a bit.
Yeah. It kind of just ended up mid for Meyer Shank. The 500 was a bright spot given, ungood qualifying, but at the end of the day, really just outgunned by the Ganassi and McLaren cars.
Yeah.
But that was about it. They kind of just spent the whole season treading water, both Castroneves and Pagenaud.
That's a strange thing to think about, considering Simon Pagenaud was hovering around the top 10 in the points for most of the season until the wheels just kind of fell off a little bit towards the end. It's not like he's just completely washed up. Simon Pagenaud is here to help push the team forward in the long term.
Yeah, and that didn't really come to pass this year. They kind of just stayed where they were. I mean, I would say Pagenaud was more consistent than Harvey was in the same seat, but the peaks weren't really any higher, whether that's on him. It's been a long time since that final stint of Le Mans 2011. But if that's just the peak of where Shank is, but I got to see more out of this team next year from both guys and from the team itself.
Yeah. I'm not willing to write this off as a failure just yet, but I want to see a little bit more.
having Elio around is the ultimate Indy 500 X factor if they can nail the setup on that car.
Oh, yeah.
He's just, he is different gravy at the 500.
Yeah, I was going to make this point. Like, was Pagano any better than Jack Harvey was last year? And the answer is they were pretty much identical. And thanks to RJ for digging up the key stats. Harvey last year was 13th in the points. Pagano was 15th. Harvey had two finishes in the top five. Pagano had that one podium at the Indy Grand Prix. Harvey had six top tens. Pagano had seven. Harvey had four appearances in the fast six in qualifying. Pagano had two. Virtually identical seasons, basically. You can make the case that Harvey was maybe a little bit better, but not much.
A big component of that as well is, you know, in the overall scheme of this year, the resurgence of Penske up at the front, pretty much having most, if not all, of their cars in the fast six every single weekend. And Andretti kind of falling off a cliff.
Both factors.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Indeed. Speaking of struggles, Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing.
Lots to unpack here.
Yeah. Three car lineup. Graham Rahal was 11th in the 15 car. Christian Lundgaard, who was Rookie of the Year, 13th overall for them, for Christian on that one in the 30 car. And then Jack Harvey, in the 45, 22nd overall, the fourth worst of the regular full-time runners. Now, across the board, RNL were just worse than last year.
They were.
Last year, across the board, I mean, Rahal was 7th in the championship last year. Sato was 11th. All of their cars could either only match that 11th or finish worse.
Yeah, it's tough. For Graham Rahal, you know, I think it's to his advantage. It's not to his advantage that Formula One discriminates against the traditionally undervalued and developing nation of the United States when it comes to motorsport respect, because Colton Herta not going to F1 means that there is one more driver that will regularly beat Graham Rahal in the standings every single year. Now, I will say this. He is not struggling as badly as he did in his first 2 years with his dad's team, where he looked like a straight-up nepotism hire. But it's fair to say that the halcyon years of 2015-16 are a bit behind him. He hasn't won a race since 2017. He's still good for several top 10 finishes. Nobody's denying that, but I need to see a little more.
He's still got the general consistency. I mean, a couple of years ago, he was on the right strategy to win the Indy 500, and then finger trouble at the pit stop put an end to his day. But and we talked about this with supporter of the show, JB, in one of our voice chats in the Discord, that what it feels like with Graham is that while the consistency is still there, the peaks, and this is, you know, partially Graham, partially, I'd say a big portion of it is RLL as a team, the peaks are just not there anymore. He's not going to randomly sneak, just rip off a win in the middle of the year. He's not going to sneak podiums. It's just not there anymore with this team and with him.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, I don't think Rahal was even on the podium this year, was he? I think he
was not. This team, other than Lundgaard's one, that probably should have been a
Christian
win.
Christian Lundgaard had their only podium at all three of the team's total fast six appearances. Christian Lundgaard was on a heater to end the season, and he capped that off with a second-place finish that, if you ask some, should have been turned into his maiden victory at the Brickyard Grand Prix.
He was the first car compliant with the IndyCar regulations across the line.
Yeah, this is the way IndyCar does things. Unfortunately, they tend to have a knack of taking points away after the fact but letting the initial results stand. It's really weird. I, as a James Hinchcliffe fan, remember this about James and his domed skids in Texas a few years ago when he finished in second and he got docked 20 points afterwards because his domed skid was too worn out and illegal. This is how IndyCar tends to do things. It's weird.
He skid on my dome until you can finish that.
Hey, Rory James O'Connell to the sin bin.
But the only thing more disappointing in this world than that joke was Jack Harvey.
Oh, no.
We love Jack.
We love Jack Harvey. And this move from Meyer Shank Racing to Ray Hall Leonard Lanigan was supposed to benefit both parties. Meyer Shank Racing has built their reputation. They can sign Simon Pagenaud, and Jack Harvey could go to a more established team where he can go compete for wins just like he could have at Meyer Shank.
He stank.
He had one top 10 finish all season. And for reference, Oliver Askew lost the audition for this seat 1 year ago with one top 10 finish in three races. And Santino Ferrucci, who we don't even fuck with that much, had one top 10 finish in this car as an injury substitute in Texas. And that was the only time he got on board this car.
Jack was, and it wasn't just what the lack happened? Of speed. It was the, at times, appalling racecraft.
Yeah.
I mean, there was four or five instances this year, and it's like, bud, what are you doing? The biggest one I would say is just, and yes, I know who else was involved. Hold your pitchforks. He put a pile driver on Romain Grosjean right off the track at the Indy Road Course.
Yeah. There were times this season where Jack Harvey looked completely out of his depth. And that's,
he was good last year.
He was really good last year. He was solid midfield. He was in the top five. He was challenging for wins on occasion. You could see the upside in Harvey in a smaller team. And you thought, okay, he's going to RNL. They have a good upper midfield record. They're regularly in the top 10. This could be a really good move for Harvey. And a top 10 in the championship finish wasn't outside of the realms of possibility. Mm. Nope. Fourth worst of anyone in the full-time field. That's dreadful.
Over 10 spots back from Ray Hall in the championship, and Ray Hall had a bad year by his standards.
Yeah.
He got annihilated by Lundgaard.
You are
in the same equipment. Annihilated.
You're hoping that he can replicate the Felix Rosenqvist turnaround from this season. Otherwise, this is gonna be
that quick, outside the top 20. I mean, even given the team he's in, and they were raging mid this year, you can't be outside the top 20 in the championship. Not when Lundgaard is putting up, you know, six top tens, realistically a win, and that was with Lundgaard not being very good at ovals.
There was some. I want to say he got a top 10 in Iowa. Again, not everybody picks it up like Mansell did in 93, but there's a start. There's a start.
Yeah, I do worry that Lundgaard's a bit mid on ovals. Hopefully he picks it up down the road, but that's the one chink in Lundgaard's game. Because besides that, he's a top 10 driver. And I think Malukas, which we'll get to in a little bit, or right next, actually next, actually, is still a little bit more well-rounded than him, even if the results don't quite show it. Yeah. But Lundgaard on road and street courses is a beast. He is a guy that can challenge for podium finishes in that car right now, which is something that we didn't even get from Rahal for most of this season, which is very, very impressive. Like, again, F1's loss, certainly IndyCar's gain. He's escaped the curse of the number 10 ART car, and we've got something with Lundgaard in this series.
He's done so well that the Alpine Academy has looked on, and Laurent Rossi has decided, you know what? We've done so well, we don't need to have an Alpine Academy anymore, because there's no way we're going to top this.
No, we keep developing drivers, and no one wants to race for us.
Oh, what? I'm sorry. The reason why he wants to stop his driver academy is because they got burned by Piastri after he didn't offer him a contract.
Oh,
well, maybe he should simply try harder.
Speaking of trying harder, the little team from Illinois that could, Dale Coyne Racing and all of its associates. David Malukas was 16th in the championship. Takuma Sato was 19th. It's a tale of two teams. Two drivers from two different generations, one who's just starting their career, and the other, you argue, maybe they're at the end.
Yeah. We go into Malukas first. well, the hype was real. There's something here.
What hype? What hype? Well, because
in the shadow of King Kyle, there's still plenty of praise from those in the know for Mr. David Malukas, and put in a couple giant killing performances. Lots of speed in this guy.
Yeah.
Like we were harsh on him first race out at St. Petersburg, where he put it in the wall off the marbles there. That was the only driver enforced error he made all year on track. That's already a good sign that you're not making very many mistakes, which is promising. And then you chuck in the fact that he was challenging for fast sixes multiple times over. Yeah. This kid's got raw, unbridled speed. It's very, very impressive.
He was a half a second away from snatching the win on the final lap at Gateway. He was 18 points short of winning Rookie of the Year because Dale Coyne's strategy giveth and Dale Coyne's strategy taketh away. Three top 10 finishes, two fast six appearances, and if you ask Manny, should have been voted as Indianapolis 500 Rookie of the Year over Jimmy Johnson, but yeah, no.
Jenna Fry can kiss my butt for the way she was talking about him during that 500 week. I don't care what you tell me. That was out of order. I'm like,
I'll tell you this. I haven't seen America hasn't seen a Lithuanian talent since this impressive since the great Arvydas Sabonis first came to the Trailblazers.
Yeah, but I mean, this was a great first year to build on. I mean, he was throwing hands with Joseph Newgarden a couple times.
Yeah. That's impressive stuff on any level. He's a very talented kid and one to watch out for in the media. We've called him now the bus cousin a couple of times now because of his appearance on Bus Bros. This guy's got charisma oozing out of him. This guy's going to be a media darling for a decade. I can tell already.
As long as his career development, because yeah. I've seen this happen with another Dale Coyne driver that should have been Indy 500 Rookie of the Year, moved up to a brand new big team in the second year, and then, well, they're racing LMP2s now, and that's Ed Jones. Hoping this is different. I mean, his family's company, HMD, they're willing to spend money, not just on him, but on other prospects.
There's a lot there to like with Malukas going forward. I hope, like you say, I hope he sticks around at Dale Coyne. I hope they can nurture his talents and use him because there is definitely a very fast race car driver here. No doubt about it. RJ, talk to me about your man's Takuma.
There was a report from Marshall Pruitt and Racer.com, one of these silly season reports late in the season that emerged, that apparently Andretti and Coyne were trying to arrange some sort of trade to get Sato back in exchange for sending Devlin DeFrancesco off to Dale Coyne. Now that's been called off. Takuma Sato says he wants to come back this next season. It's looking likely that he will for his age 46 season. This man seemingly never aged, and I don't know if it was just because moving to a new team is hard, but it definitely felt like the first real signs of Takuma Sato has finally starting to fall off, and it's debatable whether or not, you know, he should run another full season or if he should split it with Linus Lundqvist, Indy Lights champion, Benjamin Peterson, also another Indy Lights contender out of the HMD stable. It's tough to say. I'm hoping there is one more good Indy 500 run in Takuma Sato because, like, for a while, Takuma Sato was the fastest man in practice. Then it just didn't come together in qualifying in the race.
So, and then I think Ganassi laid out their works on the table. I mean, there just wasn't a lot here from Takuma. It felt like he felt anonymous, where like nothing especially, we know how Takuma is. Trey, say the line.
Not now. Sato!
Yay! But it just felt like a nothing burger of a season. I mean, even at the 500, it just wasn't much there.
Yeah. Like he was running like, so he had top 10 pace for most of practice and it just didn't come together, as RJ alluded to. Just wasn't there when it really counted, unfortunately. And that's kind of the story of Sato's season. The only real massive bright spot was that alternate strategy running Gateway where he finished in fifth. That was really about it for Sato all year. And yeah, like it might be 1 year too many for Takuma at this point. Father Time remains undefeated, and it's a big ask for Takuma to keep this up at going into his age 46 season. You know,
I'm hoping that, you know, because we were saying this when he went back to Andretti the last time, then he ripped off a 500 win. You know, maybe this could be one of those, like, Max Kellerman exposed for saying Tom Brady's gone off the cliff moments and he has a few good years left in him.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully. But
the only thing going off the cliff for Tom Brady is his marriage.
Ooh, now we date in another podcast.
Oh, boy. No kidding. But should we talk about Uncle Ed?
No, because he's not a full-time driver, but his team is full-time. Ed Carpenter Racing. Connor Daly in the 20, Rinus VK in the 21. Rinus VK was 12th in points. Connor Daly was 17th. I would like to ask for a heat check on where this team packs out. You don't have to specifically say they're above Etz team or below Etz team, but like VK has the team's only win since Newgarden left for Penske.
Mm.
And they have always prepared rockets for the Indianapolis 500.
Oh, yeah.
But outside of that,
not much.
Rinus VK has a long-term contract extension. I feel that he's going to hit his ceiling before that point. But, man, this season felt like a bit of a disappointment because Rinus VK still has immense upside, right?
Absolutely.
Pole at Barber, finished on the podium, started on the front row at the Indy 500. Again, ECR builds rockets for the 500.
The best 500 specialists in the field.
Easy. Six top 10 finishes. But that balances out with back-to-back unforced crashes at the 500. He was the first man out. Yikes. Mm-hmm. He crashed out on his own at Detroit. And then he had the mother of all spatial awareness issues at Portland. And he finished 12th in points.
Just blew Jimmy up for no good reason. I mean, it was a mixed bag for Arenas because the speed is clearly still there.
Absolutely.
But yeah. Race management, racecraft, I would argue he regressed about as far as I've ever seen him in the series.
I'll give Rinus this. He was hip checked multiple times over the course of the season that ruined his race. Yeah. Like Rinus VK, I think like Rinus is in a weird place in that IndyCar's had a youth explosion in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Rinus has not had that big come and get me season that Colton Herta and Pato O'Ward, hell, even Felix Rosenquist when he first rolled up in IndyCar was eighth in the standings as a rookie.
Yeah.
You know, so like he's like they've had big seasons to say, I'm here, I'm an established player. VK has the one win and not much else. I mean, this is year three, I want to say, of Rinus VK in IndyCar now full time. And it's good, but as we would say in the UK, it's good, but it's not quite Carlin. Because unfortunately, we've been spoilt with other young drivers that have had even bigger upsides than Rinus VK has since he's rolled up here, i.e. Colton, Pato, and Alex Palou.
I will argue that when Rinus VK is switched on, right, I hate that I have to argue that, like, if we're talking about the youth movement in IndyCar, Rinus VK should be in that discussion.
Yeah, but the results just don't quite show it yet. It's really weird. And yeah, like, it's just not quite come together for Rinus yet like it has for other drivers on the board. And it's a shame because I think Rinus, you're right, I think the upside is as good as anybody's in the series. I've seen his speed. It's blistering on occasion. He's now genuinely one of the best 500 qualifiers in the field. Top four pretty much every year.
He's like Ari Leyendijk if he had road course credentials.
Yeah, but it's just not quite there yet, and he needs to take another step. Hopefully,
I would argue that he regressed this past year as far as just race management, being able to race around people, because he put some great moves on people during the 2021 season. Had a couple legitimate overtake of the year contenders.
I can't
think of any major on-track action with him this year that didn't involve him either getting badly hip checked or him blowing someone up.
Right.
Just Connor Daly. Connor Daly worked for a while to get this full-time ride. He got
the mullet.
Then he got his haircut. He had that hometown hero Indy 500 performance that he had last year that basically won him this seat. That Ed Carpenter could finally let go and become and let somebody else drive the 20 full time. He was 17th in points. He didn't finish inside the top 10 outside of the month of May. Iowa was supposed to be a really good weekend. He started third both races. He converted that into 19th and 16th. They just didn't have the race base. What happened?
It's incredibly frustrating because Connor Daly is such an easy guy to root for. And his story of driving for something like 9 different IndyCar teams over the course of his career is, it's something out of a John Boyes video more than anything else. But
are you saying that Connor Daly is the Jeff Francoeur of IndyCar?
Precisely. That's exactly what I'm saying. Oof. However, at a certain point, you've got to look back at the situation with Connor and just say, is this it? Is this the peak of Connor Daly's powers? Because he was better when he was at Foyt, and that's saying something. That's
rough. That is a rough statement in the context of this podcast.
He was 17th this year. He was 18th in his one season at Foyt. His best year, arguably, was in 2016, where he arguably had a more complete rookie campaign than his good friend Alexander Rossi, but Alexander Rossi won the Indy 500.
Whoops.
You do.
I like Daly. I like him a lot. And I'm not fully convinced of ECR as a team on road and street courses. And look, Connor Daly, to a degree, is still the bad luck Brian of IndyCar. Because
you've seen his hot tub?
Yeah, good Lord.
They're still sucking the marbles out of it to this day.
Oh, yeah. But at the same time, I can't help but get the feeling that given that Daly is no sprint genius, he's 30 years old next month, Connor. Like,
Daly's 30 years old.
He's not a young man anymore. He's not this prospect that, you know, still has something to develop. He's 30 now. He's only a couple of years younger than Joseph Newgarden. And, like, you have to wonder if this is the best you're going to get from Daly at this point, then is he worth keeping around? Because I'm not entirely sure what he brings to the table at this point. Because he had a big 500 this year, and the rest of his season just wasn't anywhere near that.
I think the 500 bought him a lot of goodwill because
if you can put in a good 500, it cures all ills.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I also think it might have been a bit of a blessing in disguise because a curse in disguise, I should say, because it also meant that it flattered the rest of his season.
I mean, yeah, it's fair. I've long considered like Ed Carpenter to be our generation's Gary Bettenhausen. Gary Bettenhausen, fantastically quick driver. Every year he went to Indy, just could never get it done. Ed, looking like the same way. Connor, we'll see. But it seems like Connor Daly is becoming the adopted son that Ed Carpenter never had. Does Ed Carpenter have children? I'm sure he has children at this point.
I think he does.
I think we'd be like less harsh on this team if they weren't sponsored by Web3 Funny Money. But
the funny money. I just think we've been waiting so long for ECR to take that next step outside of the ovals.
Yeah.
And they just don't.
They have not had that dude show up since Joseph Newgarden in 2016.
And even then, it was flashes of Newgarden. It wasn't consistent. And then Newgarden got into Penske equipment.
Yeah.
Whoops.
I don't know how that turned out. Yep.
McLaren.
Arrow McLaren, SP.
Padma Ward, 7th overall. Felix Rosenquist, right behind him, 8th overall this year in the 5 and 7 cars, respectively. Padma Ward is still that dude.
He's so fun.
Joint best qualifier in the sport this year, as a fun fact for you. Starting average, 6.6 on the year. Very, very fast indeed. 8 Fast 6 appearances, including the 500. And despite this, somehow only one pole position. Funnily enough, still ridiculously fast, let down by McLaren and maybe one gamble in May. Well, maybe two if you consider the Grand Prix as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking that Grand Prix of Indy, like, why'd they leave him out on those tires?
That was silly move. You know, genius that doesn't work out is madness. That was complete fucking madness.
Yeah. You know what really killed it? You know what really killed any hope of him in hindsight? Like, Nashville was like the final knife in the back, but those back-to-back engine failures, the engine failure Road America, the fuel pressure failure Mid-Ohio, those were painful to absorb in the middle of a championship run.
He was on the form that, you know, if he just keeps this going, he could have more or less done a willpower to willpower and just bringing home really solid results and taking the points with them. But just so many mechanical failures for McLaren this year in a supplier series.
Yeah. Yes. They were just not reliable. They were not reliable across the whole season. And it hurt.
McLaren unreliability ruining a Young Stars championship threat.
No.
Time is a flat circle.
It's a startling announcement. It's absolutely shocking that this came to pass. But look, we are more than inclined to give Pato the benefit of the doubt. The man's a monster. Like, he's...
You saw him overrun everybody at Barber. Like, obviously, he had help getting to the front at Iowa in the 300-mile race, but once he did, there just wasn't any stopping him.
No, I still, in the grand super license debate, still say that Pato Award is a more complete IndyCar driver than Colton and Herta is, even though Colton's maybe got the better win rate on track record. Pato Award is a free tool driver. He does everything well. He's fast. He's consistent. He doesn't make many mistakes.
And he's an easy guy to root for. Remember,
incredibly easy guy to root
for. There was a very good chance that he doesn't even get to Indy Lights, let alone IndyCar.
Yeah, he's had to bite and claw and scratch for every result he's ever gotten in his junior career. And he is now pound for pound for me a top three or four driver in this entire series. 7th was a disservice to Pato Award this year. And by the way, on the other end of the coin, delighted that Felix Rosenquist is still going to be here next year.
Hell yeah. Like, they gave him Craig Hampson, championship winning engineer in the offseason, but he enters the month of May, 16th points, and right, you're thinking, yeah, this is it, this is a wraps. But then he doesn't win the 500, but he finished 4th in the 500, and that was really, you're thinking, maybe that's done enough to save his season. You get through all the mess that's gone on, and while he's doing that, he finishes 3rd in Toronto, gets back on the podium. He already won pole at Texas until his car broke. Then he gets his 2nd pole at the Brickyard Grand Prix. He actually finished the year 9th in points.
It's not bad at all.
He stepped the hell up when he needed to save his seat. I look back at the 500, and both of them had a chance to win
that
race. Oh,
was 8th. Yeah, so he was 8th. He was ahead of Rossi, Herta, Rahal, VK, Grosjean.
Good names.
The 500 saved his season. And then he carried
through. Not just that. Like, the two of them had a chance at the 500 and just got outgunned by superior equipment in the end.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we watched Marcus go by Pato. Like, he had 6 hold pistons.
I know at the time we were thinking that, like, Pato could have stayed in the throttle on the last lap. He was saying he didn't have the horsepower to make that stick and get by him cleanly. I don't know. ultimately, like, they're the most complete Chevrolet team at the 500 every year because ECR builds fast cars. They don't usually finish all that well.
Well, Penske's fallen off a cliff since 2019 and have not climbed back up.
Yep. So this team's going to be expanding next year to three cars. Alex Rossi is coming in. Is that going to be the difference maker for them? Is it too soon for a three car expansion? I wonder. Because we saw what RNL did with the expansion, and I'm worried.
I have but one question for them. Which Alex Rossi do they get? Because if you get arguably fastest guy in the entire field, electric overtaker, Indy 500, perennial threat, Alexander Rossi, then you are set.
Yeah, you're the best Chevrolet power team at the 500 all around.
But if you get the Alexander Rossi that walks under ladders and steps on cracks for a living, well, it's not going to go so well.
Could be a long year.
We have no idea which one we're going to get because this year we got just about every Alexander Rossi you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, every single one. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Can I just say as well, because I know this has been like, it's been a wild year for McLaren. We'd love to talk about how Zach Brown is just playing the system, working us all into a shoot. Taylor Kyle, who basically runs this McLaren SP team, he's done a fantastic job to just keep it all together, regardless of what, just whatever he can control, he's doing a damn good job at it. They finally become more than just a team that sets the car up for Pato and everybody else just deals with
that. That right there is, I think, the biggest step that McLaren made this year.
Massive step. That
mechanicals aside, they raised their floor enormously compared to last season.
Felix was 21st in points last season.
Look, nothing like the driver who, let's not forget, was throwing hands with Scott Dixon for wins at times. Driver for hire, Felix Rosenquist.
Yeah.
He looked completely different this year and they all made a big step at the 500. And then you go out and you get Alex Rossi. Like, on a team side, they're doing everything right. They just have to shore up that mechanical reliability.
If we get the Alex Rossi of 2019, everyone on the grid needs to be on notice. It's that simple. Because he is a guy that can win you a championship. He can win you anything on paper if Rossi is at his best. So it depends which one they get. It's a roll of the dice that I think is certainly worth taking. What will come up with it, we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of Alex Rossi, Andretti Autosport.
Let's put the hazmat suits on.
Yeah, the four-car fleet, 26 of Colton Herta was 10th overall. The 27th of Alex Rossi was 9th. Beat him on countback right at the end. Romain Grosjean in the 28 car, 13th. Devlin DeFrancesco,
23rd. 23rd, just a handful of points ahead of Kyle Kirkwood. It's a lot. Here's a big question for you. Is Andretti out of the big three?
Yes.
Yes.
Without even that is a silly question. Yes.
McLaren SP has
supplanted them.
Yeah. Both McLarens beat every Andretti over the course of this season. Felix stepped it up. McLaren just looked like a better run team at the moment.
Yeah.
And that's the
most of the teams here not named AJ Foyt Enterprises look better run than Andretti did this year, because you have one of the best melting pots of talent.
Yeah.
Devlin aside, King did not pay me to say that. We know their engineering strength. We know that they are basically best buds with HPD and Honda. And they were a train wreck.
Let's just get Devlin out of the way first. Like, I'm not one to tell George Steinbrenner IV how he wants to spend his money as an IndyCar enthusiast, but you could tell how much Andretti Steinbrenner Racing really, really misses Colton Herta since he went from what was then the 88 car to the 26.
29.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Okay, this, never
the
mind.
The 88 was the, was the 29 was the 88 before then. It's all confusing.
Numbers, kids.
Hendrick numbers moving .exe.
Numbers hard.
But yeah, I mean, Devlin was, to be fair, I do think that he improved over the course of the season, but the start was rough. I mean, taking it three wide to the apron multiple times at Texas, causing multiple multi-car pileups.
Three of them.
Not
things.
Ideal. But to his credit, took the blame for the crashes, generally did improve, but then it's a percentage of not much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that much better than a James Hinchcliffe that was on the way out with who was racing injured. Romain Grosjean. It started good. He had a podium in just his third race with his brand new team at Long Beach. He's still good at qualifying, but his average finish was three places worse than he had last year with Dale Coyne and Wick Rare Racing. And then the narratives of old came back. The narratives of old Romain Grosjean came back. Fair or not, sometimes it wasn't fair, sometimes it was. Particularly, and it wasn't even just like, you know, him getting into beefs with other drivers. It was the fact that there's a lot of hype around his Indy 500 debut, and it ends with him spinning out and hitting the wall. That's not great.
No. It was the definition of a mixed bag, and I think that is pretty much every driver here with Andretti. There were some decent peaks, but the thing I noticed most about Grosjean is that for most of his season with Coyne, he was very consistently, you know, top class in qualifying and at least competitive in race pace. It was just up and down all year for pretty much every Andretti. One weekend you'd have a couple of their cars in the top five fighting for wins. And then the next, Romain Grosjean and Alex Rossi are fighting each other quite literally outside the top 10.
And then that cartoon fight cloud is getting Colton and Devlin swallowed up into it. And it's not even their fault.
We had a race this year where every Andretti hit each other and then each other again by hitting different teammates.
It was the wackiest race of the entire season. It was the most newsworthy headline race of the season, and for all the wrong reasons for Andretti.
Andretti running around the paddock area. Where is he?
Overzealous team representatives telling Indianapolis Star reporters to delete their recordings.
Yeah.
Thank goodness they walked that back.
Yeah, yeah, good job from Chris DeHarde getting the scoops. But there's not a lot of good to come out of this camp this year. We expect Andretti to be a bit higher up than fringe top tens. Yes, they got a couple of wins on the year here and there.
Yeah.
Herta was still like, okay, I'll cover Grosjean first. Grosjean was the walking definition of mid by the time this all was all said and done. This was not what was supposed to happen with Grosjean. There were people out here predicting this man was going to lead this team. He has not.
There were people that were going to predict him to win the championship.
No! And he was nowhere near that this year.
Now, Alexander Rossi is at least back, you know.
Is he, though?
He's fifth in Indy. He's back there. He's got three podiums. He got a pole at Road America. And he finally broke that winless drought with a non-zero amount of help from a drinks bottle that may or may not have been too heavy or too light. Who's to say?
So he won a race with an illegal car. He was the only Andretti worth a damn at the 500. They're 500 where they are usually at least fighting for the win. They were nowhere all day.
Yeah, Rossi was the only man even close, and even then it never looked like Rossi was going to win it.
I mean, it took Pillow and Dixon dropping themselves out of the equation, self-inflicted or not, to get him into the top five. And mechanical failures, and Alexander Rossi at the 500, who is damn good at the 500.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Grosjean, again, sometimes fighting for top five, sometimes fighting to stay in the top 15 with seemingly no rhyme or reason. Rossi, the peaks were good. The floor was resting somewhere in hell.
Bonhart.
Barnhart, and then there's Colton.
And then there's Colton Herta.
I don't know if he's going to get to Formula One next year. Likely not. I don't know if he's going to get there
at this stage. At this stage, the answer is, I mean, he's kind of self-admitted. He's more or less aiming for 2024. And man, when he is on it, that Indy Grand Prix, when he's on it, he's one of the best drivers on planet Earth.
Yeah, he is. Like, you saw that save. You saw the way he carved through everybody in the wet, like... That's the dude Helmut Marko, sincerely or not, believes that, like, this dude can race in the trademark pinnacle of motorsport registered trademark.
You know what his season gave me a lot of? His season gave me a lot of the same vibe. Yes. It gave me a lot of the same vibe as Kyle Kirkwood's. A very talented driver. Just... who already has a tendency to overdriving even further to try and drag this team forward, because Andretti were just, they had too many weekends this year where they were just another team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long Beach in the bag, but everybody's going to talk about the carb day wreck and the flip of the 500 that writes off his primary car, and he has to go out there and just wheeze to a pitiful display at the 500.
His car was withdrawn due to handling problems.
Yeah, he was told to sit.
Yeah, it started out pretty ungood with an engine failure, then the crash in practice, and it just spiraled from there. He had one of the worst months of May that I can remember in recent times for a top team driver.
Yeah. It was brutal. Completely derailed this season. And it's not the first. That's like the third time this has happened for Colton Herta in his IndyCar career, where the 500 has completely torched his season.
I was saying, phenomenal qualifying in 2019. Car explodes less than 10 laps into the race.
Yep.
Jeez. Maybe, I mean, look, if the F1 thing doesn't ever happen, the potential to be one of IndyCar's all-time greatest drivers is still up there. He does not turn 23 years old until March 30th of next year.
It is weird to think he is not even 23.
And yet he's been talked about so much. From the time he was in Indy Lights as an 18-year-old.
I mean, Andretti has to do something to arrest the slide. Because it's not a one-off thing. This is a trend, and it's getting worse.
They're not going to downsize next year. It's looking like they're just keeping everybody slide in Kirkwood in place of Rossi. I really hope that works out.
I say, they're going to pick up Kirkwood. I mean, the overdriving twins of Kirkwood and Herta. They need to get these guys some good equipment, and regarding the atmosphere within that team, I can't imagine that the ongoing feud between what seemed like everyone, all four of them, did anything to help Rossi or Grosjean's season.
Yeah, look, no matter which way you slice it, Andretti, a big team with arguably the second biggest set of resources of anyone in the field, is going to have one driver next year that's won a race. One. For what used to be the most stacked team in IndyCar. It's going to be a wild dynamic next year. There's going to be a lot of high risk, a lot of high reward, and it's going to be a lot of boom or bust. And, Colton Herta is an incredible driver, but the results have slipped for the last 2 years. And it's not all on him, but it's partly on him. And they've all got to get their shit together because they're better than this on paper. And we are not supporting Andretti for 10th, 9th, and 13th on the year. Yeah. That's nonsense.
Not when you've got, the set of drivers that they... And next year, you're picking up Kirkwood. Again, the only guy who could get anything out of an AJ Foyt car this year.
You luck back into him after you wouldn't give him a chance because you wanted Devlin DeFrancesco and his sponsorship more at the time.
Yeah, yeah. They coughed up a year of Kirkwood's development for that, and that's not ideal for anybody. Right, Chip Ganassi Racing, folks.
One of these things is not like the others.
Yeah. We have Jimmy Johnson, who was 21st overall in the 48 car. We had Alex Palou in the 10, who was 5th overall. Scott Dixon, 3rd in the number 9 car, which is quite disappointing for Dixon standards these days. And Marcus Ericsson, who was 6th, but did win the big one and took the 500.
Yeah, just to recap, because every podcast is somebody's first. Scott Dixon had as good a season as Will Power, arguably in some aspects better. He finished every lap. He had the more top 10 finishes than everybody else. He was remarkably consistent, but 1 mile per hour on the pit entry too much cost him both the BorgWarner Trophy and the Astor Cup. And he wasn't even that good in qualifying. He had the record-setting Indy 500 pole run, and then after that, he only makes the fast sits twice.
No, and he casually had the best qualifying run maybe in 500 history and used up all of that speed all in that run alone.
And also, you know, Marcus Ericsson, even if his ceiling is like can't get a championship, still an Indy 500 winner and still ridiculously consistent, if not spectacularly so, most of the time. Jimmy Johnson. It's time to have a dialogue about Jimmy Johnson, right? Second year, we got what we came for out of the Jimmy Johnson experience, right?
Did we?
And we got fair enough. He had a few moments on ovals that you could see the Jimmy Johnson of old. That saving qualifying at the 500. Everyone had their heart in their mouth watching that car slide, and he caught it. But then the results just don't really show.
Yeah, because, like, look, you can stomach the, like, all, because, like, Jimmy Johnson on a road course in NASCAR was not the best, but still very good. Jimmy Johnson, a high downforce IndyCar at age 47 on a road and street course is not great. But you can stomach the pain of all the spins and crashes, although Toronto and Portland were definitely not his fault. You can stomach that, but not when one of those crashes is the most hyped Indy 500 debut, arguably in the last decade, on your own, and it could have cost your teammate the chance to win the race.
No, it did. And not only it was a stupid crash as well, because he just threw the car in way too low, hit the grass, and then crashed the car.
Yeah. Look, let's be real here. That was what we were really here for Jimmy. This was meant to be all that investment in Jimmy Johnson. This was the dream scenario. He races the 500. That was meant to be the big meal ticket, the big coup for IndyCar, and he was disappointing in every sense. The qualifying, he botched his fast 12 run, and then in the race itself, he crashes there too. Like, yes, he had two excellent races in Texas, and what have you. He clearly is good on ovals. Like, he's clearly good for the most part on ovals. The road and street courses are dreadful. And look, it's not so bad there because let's be real here. Like, IndyCar's ratings are not that high for those races, but you're here for the 500, and the 500, he was piss poor by his standards. Even he had a car that could win.
Yeah. He was quick in bursts. His race pace was not there as much as his practice and qualifying pace was before the save. And yeah, just.
Yeah, but the thing is, RJ,
What the hell was that a gateway?
It was not great. Although he did improve across the weekend. And this is still a significant improvement on the year versus last year. You could see the step that he had taken.
Yeah.
But he's also in a Ganassi car where Ganassi was busted at the 500 this year.
Dominant. Tony Kanaan nearly won the 500 at age 47 this year.
That's great.
Tony Kanaan was on the podium. Let's not forget this. 470 years old. Like, it's this was not what the Jimmy Johnson experiment was supposed to be. I don't care what you tell me. Right, this was
going to get another year of it. You know, Carvana wants to stay with him. Johnson indicated he wants to come back to IndyCar. He also wants to do Garage 56. Who knows what'll happen? I'd like to see him get one more crack at it, but That's got to be it, right?
Depends how it goes. I mean, if he takes another step,
sure,
fine. If he can, thing is, his pace on the ovals is okay. It's the mistakes.
Yeah.
That, and I mean, again, it wasn't even like a driving mistake at the 500. He just went into the corner way too low and bent the car. Sure, fine. Another year of their experiment. But I guess the story for Ganassi's season is good, just not quite good enough.
They got four wins. A lot of teams would love to have four wins.
Not Penske.
Had nine.
They had nine. And Penske's resurgence on road courses more than anything, because I mean, they were dog water at the 500 again.
Yeah, Chevrolet made gains.
They made gains. Couldn't really see him elsewhere. I couldn't really see him at the 500.
Yeah.
It really didn't leave the Ganassi cars. I mean, once Dixon had that mistake and Pillow had that caution come out, and they still pulled some points out of the 500.
Yeah.
But it left them vulnerable for Penske to just pick them apart on road courses.
Yeah. They were too much of a freight train, and we'll get to them in a minute. But just four wins on the year for what we knew is a team that is meant to challenge for the championship is just not going to win very much. Like, you're relying on Dixon to only have two wins. You're leaving the door open for him to be beaten. And that's ultimately how this season played out. Newgarden won five of them, for Christ's sake. He won more than Chip Ganassi as a team did.
And but then it wasn't Ganassi who left that door open.
No.
1 mile per hour.
Yeah. One of the most, I think this will go down as one of the greatest errors in 500 history. It cost Dixon everything. Dixon would have doubled up easily if it wasn't for that.
He would have tied AJ Foyt's record with seven national titles and got that second Indy 500 that many people feel like he needs to legitimize his legacy. Thank goodness they're keeping Alex Pillow after all of this.
Oh, my God.
Like Marshall Pruitt wrote for Racer.com, it felt like a weird fever dream. And thank goodness they're keeping him, because last impressions are everything. And boy, that last impression when he beat the field by 30 seconds.
Ultra beat him down.
Oh, yeah. A 30-second win.
A 30-second win over fucking Joseph Newgarden.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Look, that was the beat him down that to remind everybody in IndyCar that Alex Pillow is that dude. Like, he is still so good at this. We forget there was three or four races this season where he was second and he was narrowly beaten by, ironically enough, a Penske and or Pato O'Ward, guys who we all know are also really, really good this series. But Pillow is a magician. I've said it countless times. That's my nickname for him, and I'm going to stick with it. Pillow is a magician. He finds ways of pulling ridiculous results out of nowhere. And he did that quite a few times this season where he undercutted himself into play. He strategized himself into track position. And again, Laguna Seca was the cherry on top. That was a crushing victory to win that race by 30 seconds.
And we look at the 500 as Dixon's error, but we forget Alex Pillow was throwing hands with him.
Yeah.
Those two were more or less running away with it. And then Pillow got caught out by a caution that just fell the wrong way and basically ended his race.
Yeah. Just complete bad luck. Just one of those things. Lady luck at the 500 does play a hand in this sometimes. And yeah, Pillow was unlucky.
Yeah. I don't know how long Alex Pillow and Chip Ganassi Racing are going to stay together after next season. I'm glad they worked things out to a peaceful resolution for next year. I'm glad he's going to race. I'm glad that all of this can now just be swept aside for the moment.
Indeed. Probably the best for all parties concerned. Their core is still incredibly strong. Pillow, and this Dixon.
And we haven't even mentioned Marcus Ericsson ended up winning the 500.
Yeah.
Which is huge. A narrative busting victory and one of the highlights of the entire motorsport year. fucking good for Marcus Ericsson. After all the years of people saying that he was just another pay driver in Formula One, you know, good for him to stick two fingers up to the F1 snooty crowd by winning arguably the biggest race in motorsport.
Wait a minute. This is my gimmick, Dre.
Stolen.
Take I'm the IndyCar hawk at the store. And
I am Mace Windu. I balance both sides of the force. Like it's just how we do things around here.
Well, ultimately, Marcus Ericsson's biggest crime was, you know, again being beholden to Penske's road course superiority for the rest of the year, and his teammate is Scott Dixon.
Doesn't help. But what a win! If you're going to win one thing, win that. You know.
take one of those over the you take one of those over the championship every year.
Of course you do. Team Penske.
On the note of championships, here's where it ended up. Here's where the Astro Challenge Cup finally rests.
A reminder: first, second, fourth. That was Penske on the championship this year with their three cars. Will Power in the number 12 car, taking his second Aster Cup. Joseph Newgarden for the third year in a row, championship runner-up. Newgarden must be getting really sick and tired of losing to someone just an inch better than him. And Scott McLaughlin, year two, fourth in the championship overall. Is there a weakness here?
It's the Indy 500. And I am sure that they're just tanking their form at that race deliberately. That way they cannot be accused of having Roger Penske as the owner and of the Speedway in the series. That way they can't be accused of rigging it so that they win the Indy 500 every year. Or maybe Chevrolet's just lacking horsepower at the 500.
Look at it this way. They were first, second, and fourth in spite of mediocre or to terrible 500s.
That's not nothing.
Yep.
That's real good.
That's ridiculous. That's just
how good they were. And that is with, you know, especially in the case of Newgarden and McLaughlin, leaving a lot of points on the table, whether it mechanical failure or just near driver error.
Yeah.
So good. Like, you know, We've spoke and waxed lyrical about Will Power, so we'll get to him towards the end and we'll keep it brief. But Scott McLaughlin, year two, fourth place overall. The month of May is what probably did him in from a genuine title challenge this season.
He's got spun out at the Grand Prix in the wet. He follows that up with a wreck in the Indy 500. And, you know, after that, he goes to Detroit. He goes off the course. He has a very anonymous race. But after that, he goes on a heater. He gets 3 wins, 3 poles, 7 podiums. Driving for Penske helps, but this isn't all of why he turned it around this season.
He's a monster. He's a freak. There is no other way of describing it. I do not know how he's been able to turn this around from supercars and pick this up so quickly. It's astonishing progress.
Scotty Mac. There is only one Scotty McLaughlin. And I mean, it's not just because the thing is, he's driving for Penske. There were times this year where he was making Joseph Newgarden and Will Power look run-of-the-mill ordinary drivers.
Portland. He crushed them in Portland.
He crushed everybody in Portland.
That was destruction. He led 104 laps out of 110 in that race.
We were all staring at the tire fire that was Andretti's race at Mid-Ohio. Scott McLaughlin just fucked up and won the thing.
Yeah, yep. Easy. That's the thing about this. This is a bold take. McLaughlin might be the best front runner in IndyCar already, and that's a terrifying thought because when it comes to dictating the pace of a race, the three times he got to the front of the field, he won all three times.
Two of them he had Alex Palou breathing down his neck. Oh, you know, just a defending national champion.
Didn't have an answer for him. Palou couldn't touch him. Again, same thing at Portland. He had Power behind him the whole way through. Power was not in his league that day. Like,
nope.
Like McLaughlin,
if Scotty can raise the floor, oh God.
Oh, God. Look out, because he's not going to have a hole in this game. And at this point, he might be the best of their 500 runners, too. That's a terrifying thought, because Newgarden's never really been able to put together a 500 under Penske. Powers had his moments. Newgarden
is now on the clock as old guy without a Borg Warner,
which is crazy. Look,
and Penske struggles. He's not even been close, really, any year.
The terrifying thing is, if you looked at Newgarden's championship record since joining Penske, it reads like Scott Dixon's. Newgarden is arguably pound for pound the best driver in the series now. Like, it is, he is there every year, and he can win anything besides the 500 if he's dialed in. Five wins last year, the oval driver of 2022 besides the 500. Three oval wins on the year as well. He's stupid good. I can't stress this enough about how good Joseph Newgarden is when he's dialed in. He is as good as anyone in global motorsports. I stand by this claim.
He didn't start off this season in a huge hole like last year. He was just so much peaks and valleys throughout the season. And, you know, that broken damper that the Iowa 300.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
He was putting boots to asses in Iowa 2, and the car let him down. And he's not the only one that happened to this year, but in clutch time, in winning time, that more or less ended his championship, because there was nothing more that he could do once that happened.
He went from 25th to second at Laguna Seca, and it wasn't enough.
No. Because there's not a soul living or dead who could beat Alex Palou.
Because, and in the terms of the championship, when nobody is really consistent, you can't do much better than a 50% plus podium rate on the season from William Stephen Power. 12 top fives, 13 top tens, 5 poles for the all-time record at 68 for his career in a second championship. Still got it.
He just pointed the field to death.
Didn't give him an inch to breathe all year long. Was always in the mix, was always there. Marcus Ericsson took the championship lead after the 500, and bless him, Ericsson held on to it for a lot longer than I thought he was going to. But Power was just breathing down his neck all the way through, and then ran clutch at the end of the season. Did not put a foot wrong besides Toronto pretty much all year long.
Like, and that is despite 15th place at the 500 in an anonymous Penske showing.
Yeah, it just didn't matter. Everywhere else, he was phenomenal. Like, we mentioned it on the last week's show. Average finish on the year was under 6.
Now look at this, okay? I got the results up in front of me. Ericsson pulled 109 points from the 500. Power pulled 32. Newgarden pulled 34.
Oh,
just, I mean, Penske's superior.
And they both ended up in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, Penske's superiority on road courses this year. We had seen flashes of it the last couple of years that they could still get it done on road courses, but nothing like at the rate that we were used to. Now we're about there again, where if you want to win one of these road course races, you're going to have to beat all three of Penske's guys now.
You're damn right. It was a long time coming under this new era, but, you know, Roger Penske, I'm sure he's decided to rig this game for himself. No, Will Power was amazing. I said it on the last episode that, like, going from the back to finish third at Mid-Ohio, coming off a Road America weekend where you got dumped by Devlin DeFrancesco, the greatest test of your brand new Zen Master attitude, and you just about kept it together for a season-saving performance.
Oh, what a year we've had. What a year we've had. That was a fun season, everybody.
Dude, it was. It was full of some wild ass discourse, but I'm glad we got through in the end together as one family. Just some notes on some part timers. It's a shame Dry and Rhine Bowl Racing only run the 500 because they prepare good cars for that race.
Mm-hmm.
J.R. Hildebrand and Tachi out of Calderon deserve better than to have the legs cut out from them. Was that the last we saw of Juan Pablo Montoya at the 500? Probably. If it is, I'm glad we got to see him back again. I'm glad we got to see Simona Di Silvestro back running some road course races.
Love Simona.
I hope Peretta Autosport finds a budget for more of this stuff.
They probably will. I think they're saying they might do at least 10 next year, which almost a full schedule, which is great to see from the Peretta team and what they're doing for diversity in motorsport. Very, very important indeed. We love them for it, and long may it continue. And best of luck to Simona trying to get into the Winter Olympic team as well, because she's out here bobsleighing. Oh, what a woman.
That's awesome.
We love her. What a girl. We love Simona. Best of luck to her. That'll do it for IndyCar in 2022. We just about got through it in the end. A fun time. We mentioned some of our favorite moments earlier. Dixon's incredible qualifying run. Colton Herter in Indianapolis was off the charts. Marcus Ericsson putting two fingers up at Formula One and winning the 500. So many great moments. Tell us some of your favorites as well. Send them in. We might put them on the website at some point. But just wanted to say thank you to everyone out there that's been listening for IndyCar this year. We know you guys talk about us on subreddits and things like that. We do read them. So thank you all for tuning in and choosing us to stick with us. It's very much appreciated. Shout out to everyone that follows RJ as well on racefans.net. They've been very, very loyal to him over there as well. And yeah, thanks for reading our stuff on M101 all season long. We've been very, very grateful for that. IndyCar will return. I believe it's the first week of March, probably. We haven't got the full calendar just yet. I believe it's still in the works, but allegedly I think it's going to be first week in March. We'll have to wait and see.
March 5th, tentative date for the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete.
Yep. So yeah, first weekend in March, we'll be back for IndyCar. And of course, we'll do a 2023 season preview to iron out some of the last remaining seats and funky business before then. But that'll do it for IndyCar this year. I'm not even going to bother going for the social media queues because we've done an hour and a half, and you know where to find us. Thanks to everyone that's been listening in. Much appreciated. We'll be back. MotoGP and Motegi, hopefully next weekend. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, fingers crossed. Everyone stay safe out there in Japan. But until then, I'm Andre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thanks to everyone for IndyCar in 2022. And until then, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Blood, sweat, tears, dampers,
urine, ski. Vomit, sweat. Ooh, that's sweat.
Thank God we're ending the bodily fluid count there.